Welcome to It Is What It Is. I'm Shaw Marie. Hopefully everybody's having a good weekend so far. So I watched the Snapped special edition on Betty Broderick. And so that's what I'm going to tell y'all about today, because if y'all didn't know about her, for one, she is in the same category as like Lorena Bobbitt, you know. She set the tone, she set the defense for many, 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 many murder cases after hers. And it's weird because this is, yes, a murder, but at the same time, she also was like every woman in this time, in this era when this happened, not era, this time when it happened, she was like the definite, her and Lorena Bobbitt, dude, were like the definition of like, fuck around, and let's do this, bro. In marriages. Except for, you'll come to your own conclusion at the end of this. Was she pushed to it? Or did she just simply snap and kill him? And she's gone to, they had two different trials for this, because that very question is a very hard question to answer. So let me tell you a little bit about all of this nonsense. She was born, actually, Elizabeth Ann Basquiat. I don't know how to say her last name. Basquiat. I couldn't tell you. On November 7th of 1974 in Eastchester, New York, a suburb of New York City. She is the third of six children born to Roman Catholic parents, and they owned a successful business with some relatives. Her mother was an Irish-American, and her father was an Italian-American. They were very, very strict parents, so she grew up pretty much trained to be a housewife. Like, she went to a good Catholic school. She was careful about who she dated, only dating Catholic men. I don't know. She was just brought up to be a mom and a housewife. Because back in the day, that's really what, like, you went to school to learn to be a good wife back then. Like, that was your college. In some places, not everywhere. Slow your roll. Don't start yelling at me. Anywho. So, she graduated from high school in 1965. And then she attended college. And then she had graduated from college of Mount St. Vincent in the Bronx, where she earned a degree in early childhood education. And she also earned her minor in English. And at this time, okay, there's a guy, obviously, because she's murdered her husband. That's what she's known for, ex-husband. So there's this guy, and he is Dan. Sweet, sweet, sweet Dan. And he is one smart, intelligent man. This dude, kid you not, he, when they meet, when they run into each other and meet for the first time, they meet at the University of Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana. She's a model up in New York, right? Because she still lives in New York and she's working all the time, but she has some friends. And so she goes down to Notre Dame and she meets Dan. And when they first meet, he obviously is smitten as shit, right? And so he tries to go out on a date with her and she was like, no, I ain't trying to do that, bro. And then, so he finishes Notre Dame, right? And he moves to New York. And when he moves there, he runs into Betty again. Well, he sends Betty a, what are they called? A telegram? A telegram. How amazing. So it's now 19. Okay, so when they first meet, I should say, she was 16 years old. Okay. They are complete opposites. He is very serious. He is very driven towards his goal. She is spunky, fun, loud, venturous, outgoing. She's the talker of the group. And I don't, like, they're just complete opposites. And that's how they remain, obviously. So, like I said, she says no to the first date. And then he gets done with school. And when he gets done in school, it's 1966. And then he moves to New York, like I said. And then he sends her a telegram. A fucking telegram. He goes out of his way to send her a telegram. Asks her out. All that fun jazz. She says yes. Everybody who knows them says that the second time around, she looked at him, it was over. Over. They were in love. In L-O-V-E-E. So in April, on April 12th, 1969, they wed. And he goes to Harvard Law School, right? And she's working while he goes to school. And, well, he's finishing med school, okay? He's finishing his med school. And so, anyway, so she's working. And she's selling Avon and Tupperware. She's having Avon parties and Tupperware parties, you know, on the daily, knocking on them doors. Because back then it was a door-to-door thing. It wasn't like it is now. So he is going to freaking law school. And she's working out the bill for it. So then, eventually, they obviously get pregnant with their first child, no shocker, who was born in 1970. Mind you, they got married in 1969. So they were well on to, like, this whole pop out babies, have babies thing. So by 1973, this dude is a fucking doctor and a lawyer. So he is malpractice, I think that's what it's called. Yeah, them. He's like, everybody wants him. Okay, he's getting job offers, high job offers. High. They call it having a dual degree. Well, then he gets smitten by the offer that he gets from a San Diego place, so they move to San Diego. Mind you, they've already had two children. They have the daughter in 1970 and then another daughter in 1971. We didn't waste no time at all. And then we had a son in 1976 and another son in 1979. And then they had another baby who passed away, sadly, only after 2 days of being alive. So by 1980, they now have two girls, two boys. They're balling out, right? We're going to country clubs. We're going shopping. We're doing lunches with our friends. The whole kit caboodle. So it seems like this shit's legit. And everybody's like, oh my God, they are the dream team. Well, in the fall of 1982, Dan hires a 21-year-old, Linda. Okay. She is a former Delta airline attendant. Mm-hmm. And she is also now his legal assistant and his helper throughout the day. And so in October of 1983, a year later, she now suspects maybe something's going on with Dan, because usually Dan's home, he's there, he's around. She says, in a book, I'll tell you about the book, but she says in the book, quote unquote, that she knew that, like, he was moving on because he referred to Linda as beautiful to someone else. He was like, oh, isn't she beautiful? And that to her was like, oh shit, Dan don't ever talk about that. So that was like her first, like, cementing in her head that something was going on. Well, she's accusing him of the affair, right? She's accusing him. And he's like, no, not me, not I. Well, then in February of 1985, he moves out. So he finally is like, you know what? I'm done. I am done with this. I am cool. Yes, I've been cheating on you. God, I'm done. I gotta go. I'm in love. I can't stop it anymore. It has to be. And so by the time they do divorce in 1989, mind you, he's already a very prominent local lawyer. Okay, so he's like, it's very hard for Betty, for one, to find a lawyer who's willing to go up against him naturally. And so she believes right there that that's his first number one advantage on her, is because he is a lawyer and has friends, obviously, in that department. And so she's tripping, right? She thinks maybe this isn't gonna go well for me, because he's already has more money than me, because he is my money, because I'm a stay-at-home mom. And oh God. So they get divorced, right? And to everybody on the outside world, it looks like Betty is like winning, because in the divorce, she represents herself, and she does a damn good job at representing herself. She honestly does. And she ends up getting like $16,000 a month or some shit to, in her divorce, with like child care, alimony, all that stuff. She gets to keep a house. And like, so everybody on the outside is like, that's really sad for Linda that she was cheated on. This affair happened. Everybody knows it happened, because like I said, Dan remarries. He marries Linda, the assistant, in 1989. In a backyard ceremony. Let me remind you, that is the same year they got divorced. The divorce was finalized. So at this point in time, okay, he's 41. He's married to a 25-year-old. He's moved on. We're in love. Everything's precious. Betty, on the other hand, she may have the big house and getting all the money and whatnot have you, but she's 41 years old. She's dating a 36-year-old guy who owns his own fencing business. He was really good to lean on. He was a good listener, all the things you look for. And by the time their divorce is finalized and over and done with, the girls have already moved out. They're already in their own homes. The boys are going back and forth, back and forth. And so, like I said, to everybody else, except for obviously friends and like close people to these two, it looks like it's sad their marriage ended, but good for both of them. They're both moving on. Everything's going to be just dandy. Well, that's not what happens. So, on November 5th, mind you, now this is 2 days before Betty's birthday. Super sad. Super, super sad. 911 gets a call about some dead people. And so it's weird, because the person who calls 911 is Betty's boyfriend. And so it's like, why are you even there? His name's Brad. So it's like, why is Brad even there to begin with? But then it gets explained. So what happens is, on November 5th, 1989. Sorry, I dropped my paper. I'm back. Betty's boyfriend calls 911, and he's like, there are for sure some dead bodies. Y'all get here super duper, super fast. So they get there, and sure enough, they do. They find the dead bodies, and Linda appears to have been shot in her stomach and into the back of her head. And they find Dan partially underneath the bed, and he has been shot in the stomach. There's also a bullet hole in the wall and a bullet hole in the nightstand. And yeah, the total of five shots were fired, and three in them. Dan did not die right away. The coroner estimates, lived for about 20 minutes, give or take. She rips the phone cord out of the wall and takes his phone from his bedroom off the nightstand and puts it in the hallway so he cannot call for assistance. Dan is unable to call for assistance, and that's how he pretty much eventually ends up dying. And Linda's is pretty much instantaneous. Like, she, bam, 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 you know? So the cops are like, okay, well, sir, why the hell are you even here? How did you become the one who is here? And he says, well, I stayed at Betty's house and a friend of hers called me and says, the phone's ringing frantically, right? So he answers it. The friend says something happened at Dan's house. And so he makes sure the boys are okay. At the time, they're 10 and 13, that they're okay and they're tucked away because they're at Betty's. And he goes there and he knocks on the door. He rings the doorbell, whatever. No one's coming. No one's coming. And he's like, this is not okay. Something really is wrong. And so he breaks in. And the rest of the house is untouched. It's super creepy. Like, everything is untouched except for the two upstairs. And so he does. He immediately calls 911. He's freaking the fuck out. He doesn't know what's going on. And so the cops are like, okay, well, what do you mean? Where's Betty then? No one knows. She's not answering her phone. No one knows what happened to her. No one knows if she, like, committed suicide after killing them. They're calling the phone, her phone, like, trying to get, no one knows. And so they're like, all right, well, we need to find her SUV. And we need to look into the relationship, the past relationship between all of these people, and see why she would have wanted to kill these people, why this must have happened. And so when they do that, they go and they're searching for Betty. Like I said, they go to her house. She is not there. And then they get a call. They get tipped off that she's at her daughter's house. Sure enough, she is. And she is hiding. Well, she's not there either, right? So, like, at her daughter's house, they find her purse and her, like, the gun box. Not the gun at, like, at her house, they find the gun box. At her daughter's house, they find the gun itself in her purse. There we go. That's what I was meaning to say. It was in her purse. And they find out because they're like, what happened to all, like, what happened? And so they start looking into the background of these two because he's like, well, this is her ex-husband, obviously. So it turns out that she drove a month before the murders. She drove her damn SUV through this man's front door. Drove an SUV through the door. Yeah. When I read that, I was like, well, right there, something tells you something bad is going to happen next. If you drive an SUV through the door. And the cops straight take her to a mental hospital. They don't take her to jail. They take her to a mental hospital. She gets put on, like, a psychiatric watch. Oh my God, I can't say that word. Anyway, she gets put on watch for 3 days. They have to, like, evaluate her mentally before they can even release her. Because they're like, you drove. Okay, cool. And what tipped her off and made her do that was, she keeps violating all these protection orders, right? She keeps showing up at Dan's house whenever she wants. She's calling. She's leaving extremely violent messages on his answering machine, straight saying on the answering machine, like, I'll kill you. All this shit going crazy. So he takes the kids and he's like, girl, we're going to fucking court for, like, all this nonsense. I'm fucking taking these kids from you. You're psychotic. Dude, something in her, literally, that's when it all snaps. Boom. Snaps. So And then they find out that 8 months before the wedding, 8 whole months before the wedding, she went and bought the Smith & Wesson revolver. It's like a 38 cal. Don't know what that means, but that's what they said. And so she goes and buys that 8 months. And that's 7 months after Dan and Linda are married. So and she's practicing with it, right? She's going to Target practice, they find out. And then they find out that she straight up goes up to the counter to buy her ammunition. And she straight tells this dude, the cashier dude, she's like, "Hey, quote, I want a bullet that's going to do the most harm to a human person," end quote. And so he sells her some fucking ammunition that, I guess, once it's fired and it hits you, it expands and it explodes. So it's like, it's lethal as shit. Crazy horrible. And I'll tell you what she says happened. But anyway, so when they at her house, they also find a manifesto. They find that she has written a book, a whole book. She had enough time to finish the book before she went out and committed these murders. And I guess one of the last lines in the book is, "What's a girl to do?" That's what the book is called, is "What's a Girl to Do?" Okay, the last line is, "I'll have, the last line, the only impact I'll have on him is his death," or some shit like that. And so, like, she puts it in a book and everything. Like, "I'm straight gonna kill him. Straight up. The only thing I have to do left is to kill this dude, because I have been pushed way too far." So she turns up at the damn jail with her lawyer, right? And her lawyer's like, "Hey, we ain't talking. Don't even think about it." So no one even knows what her story is yet. And so Linda and Dan are buried together too in San Diego. That's extremely precious and sweet. So she says that she comes in the room, she takes the key from her daughter when her daughter's sleeping to get in. Because she locks the front door and everything when she leaves. I don't know why, but she's very cautious about that. And she takes the key. She goes over there. She creeps into the bedroom. When she gets into the bedroom, that Linda moved and it scared her. And so she just fucking started firing. Like, she just got startled and was like, pow, 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 pow. Shot 5 times and then was like, "Oh, no." And then left. So, the first jury came. They cannot decide because of the fact that she did present good evidence that she was mentally abused physically, and like that's what she claims, at the hands of him. And that she had literally just been driven too far. And the fact that she didn't talk to the cops, and normally, like, they at least get some sort of statement from you, they knew instantly, since she had the lawyer, like, this bitch got a plan. She ain't playing. She has a plan. She has her way of the way she thinks she's going to get out of this. And that was it. That was it. She said, legitly, like, her defense was mainly like, "Okay, listen, okay, let me break it down for you real quick. I've had 5 of this dude's babies, 5 of them. One of them has passed away at 2 days old, passed away. A baby has died. I sold Tupperware. I held so many damn Avon parties, it was ridiculous to put this motherfucker through school. I put him through school and all of this nonsense, okay? Then he has the nerve to go and hire young me, because, like, Linda, everybody says, looks like a very younger Betty. And so he has the nerve to go hire younger me, start having an affair, lie about said affair, call me crazy, fat, old, boring, and stupid, and trash me, stomp on me, and go on and have a happy life. And my boys get to go over there and have another mom and everything else. Like, hell no. Hell no. So they could not come to a decision, because she even had, there was professionals that testified that were like, yeah, for real, she fucking just snapped. Like, a bitch was pushed just way too far. Her daughters, Kate, one takes her side, one takes the dad's side. So, like, there's, like, beef there. So it's horrible because, like, it rips apart the family. It was crazy. So her first trial ends in a hung jury because they can't decide. And so they go after her again. But when they go after her again in the retrial, they say, this time we are just going after her for second degree, because the first time they tried to get first. And so they said, okay, this time we're aware that, yes, she may have been pushed too far, but she still needs to be held accountable under these statutes. Because in the first one, they were like, well, yeah, she did it, obviously, but we don't feel comfortable sending her to prison for first-degree murder terms. Like, that's not what we're cool with. And so that's why they did it the second time. So that time, it didn't work. Unfortunately, it did not work. And she got sentenced to two consecutive terms of 15 years in prison, plus 2 years for illegal use of a firearm. And so she pretty much isn't gonna die there. And she's been incarcerated since the day she committed the murders. Like, she hasn't been out since then. She did Oprah. Like, she's been on Oprah. And Oprah was like, girl, maybe you was pushed too far. And, like, everybody was like, like, the audience clapped, because at the end, like, when she's talking to Oprah, Oprah's like, do you feel sorry? Do you feel sorry about what's happened to him? And she says, I kid you not, she says, nope, I feel bad for Dan. And the fact that Dan chose to ruin our marriage, ruin my life the way he did, and he chose to step out on his marriage, have the affair, marry the mistress, and push me the way he did. That's what I feel sorry for. And legitly, y'all, the audience fucking goes nuts. You hear, yeah, yeah. Like, I'm watching it and I'm like, what? Whoa. And, like, his family, okay, it has enough publicity worldwide, obviously, because Oprah and everybody else, that people are on radio shows, and his family members and friends are driving around town listening to people on the radio be like, this is justified homicide. He deserved it. He pushed her too far. And so it's crazy. Absolutely crazy. So she is in California doing her time. In January 2010, she requested her first parole hearing, but it got denied. She showed no remorse and did not acknowledge that what she did was wrong. She refused to do those two things, and so they said, nope. She then again was denied in November and again in January 2017. And so now she is not eligible again until 2032. And there are movies, books. There's a TV series called Dirty John that features her story, and true crime podcasts, documentaries. Legitly, everybody has used her as an example of what, like, okay, so dudes probably, I know some guys who have gone crazy after breakups. I'm not going to lie. I've known some dudes, but, like, imagine that, okay? Just put yourself in her shoes real quick and imagine that. You put him through school, okay? He becomes very, very successful. Hires a hot assistant. You find out that, like, he's acting different. Things are changing. You've had his children, so you yourself have changed. You're not cute and skinny and itty bitty like you were before. Things are all different. All this type of shit. And so then you're like, you're cheating on me. You're cheating on me. And he's like, you're fat and stupid and crazy. And no, I did not. Did not. Would not cheat. Am not a cheater, McCheaterson. And then finally, he's had enough of all the fucking chaos and the craziness that he's like, check it out. So I am cheating and I'm dipping out. I'm leaving. I'm done. Bye, Felicia. Have what you want. I'm done. See you in court, bitch. And you are like sitting there and you're like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, you wouldn't even have the money that you have. You wouldn't have the hot ass fucking assistant. You wouldn't have any of that if I didn't fucking pay for you to go to school. Like, cool, dude. And she's pretty much raising these kids by herself anyway, because he's working all day, all night. Well, obviously, we all know now he's not working, but like, he was gone all the time. And so she's doing mom and dad life, which is not fucking easy. And she's literally going insane. Literally. I've been there. Like, I know where she's coming from, dude. Betty, girl, you probably shouldn't have killed him, but like, I know where she was at. And then to make it even worse, not only does this woman get my husband and take away my husband, in her eyes, still my husband, ruin my family, but now you're going to go ahead and you're going to take my children from me? Oh, hell to the no. I'm driving through that fucking front door too. This is some shit I could see myself doing. I ain't even trying to lie. Drive through that front door. Urge, listen, thank you. She does say, one other account of this entire thing, she says the only reason she took the gun over there, because everybody's like, why did you take the gun? Because she's like, I didn't go there to kill him. I really didn't. I was just going to go there and demand that they listen to me about the children and not take my babies away. Well, then they're like, well, why did you take the gun? And she says, well, I was going to fucking kill myself right there in their bedroom. If they weren't going to listen to me, I was going to fucking poop poop. Right there. And then it'd be on their conscience and I'd get the final whatever. And but like she just said, I was literally startled. And once I was startled, I just started capping. Pow, pow, pow. And unfortunately, but like how the fuck you fucking accidentally shoot somebody in the back of the dome? You don't especially when you've been fucking target practicing for months. Could almost be a professional shooter at that point. So like, you've thought about it way too long. That's why I think you deserve to be where you are, Betty. Like, you didn't just snap and, like, break at that time. You might have been scared and pulled the trigger and not ready to be, like, as tough as you were acting. But you for sure murdered these people. And it wasn't in self-defense. It wasn't because you were pushed to it or crazy. Because you thought about it. Like, you planned it. You know what I mean? You wrote a book. She stepped it out in the book and she was like, hey, this is everything he's ever done. She wrote out all the arguments and she was like, see, he's mean to me. Me, 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 me. I am a victim. Everybody feel bad. Look what he did. Like, she spent $10,000 one month and then she had the nerve in court to be like, this motherfucker don't pay for my clothes. What? You just spent $10,000, bro. Anywho, so like, she's like, going back and forth. She legitimately, it's jealousy that drove this woman nuts. And jealousy is such a bitch because she will drive you crazy, man. You'll start doing shit you never thought you'd do. I don't know if anybody else has been cheated on, but like, man, you just start doing some shit you'd never thought you'd do. When you start suspecting a motherfucker, and especially when that dude's like, nah, you're crazy. You are overreacting. Tell you right now, if any y'all look at your man and be like, you cheating, and if he says nope, you crazy, why would you ever think that? He's cheating, hands down, right? Meow. Cheater McCheaterson is in your presence. So like, I don't know, I think she was pushed to a point, but I also don't think that Dan was looking at it as like, let's push her buttons and see how far we can go, isn't this fun? I think he looked at it like, I need to protect my children, so I need to take them from her because she is not stable. This breakup did not benefit on her side. She needs a moment to like gather herself. Whether or not he said that nicely or not, I believe that's really what his intent was. It wasn't like, oh, let's hurt Betty and take the kids. It was more like, oh, Betty girl, you need to go take a hot bath, call some friends, go find yourself again, come back and be mom type of shit. That's what I think. I don't think he maliciously was like, I'm taking your kids for funsies. Because I don't think, obviously, he knows that, like, she wasn't completely stable because she was taking their divorce so hard and putting on such a brave face for everybody around. But he knew. I mean, she's violating every protection order there was to mankind. She's calling the house. She's leaving messages. She's showing up whenever she wants. She's going to his office. Like, she did not get it through her head that this man was not her husband anymore. She had a very hard time with that. And so she legit, I think, snapped at one point. Like, she did. She snapped, but not that night. I think that night she really was just scared. Because I think she snapped before that night and then just started thinking on it. And when you start thinking on it and thinking on it and thinking on it, and like, she's sitting there and she's like, my fucking birthday, bro. It's coming up. I'm a divorced woman. I don't got my kids. I'm dating some fucking young dude. Like, where am I in life? And like, she had built herself up and then she went there and like, she says, she does say that Linda said, call the police, because like, she says that Linda did see her. So it scared her because she didn't want the cops to be involved. She just wanted those two to hear her out and hear them. And she says, hear her side and hear her voice for once, because she said she was silenced. Boop. And he wouldn't let her talk. And so, dude, I don't know. I've done some crazy shit myself. I've never killed anyone, obviously, but I don't know, man. I don't know. I see why people think she snapped. And I believe, like I said, I believe she did snap. I just don't believe she snapped that night. She done snapped before. Way before that even, I think, I really legitly, I would honestly say probably their wedding day, Linda and Dan's wedding day, would probably be the day that like that broke the camel's back right there. Like, knowing Dan was married probably snapped that back. And I'm even trying to play, because that would push me way over. Like, I'm a very, very jealous person. So that would, I know, not a good trait, but I am, honesty. So I think that right there would have broke it. And then to know, like, my kids calling her stepmom. Ooh. I see. Dude, I get it. You watch the show and you don't feel bad for Betty at all, because she looks way worse than, like, a Lori. She does way worse things than Lori Vallow does. Like, the way she smiles in court and stuff. You're like, dick, you killed a man. Act sad. And she really doesn't. So, like, I'm not surprised her parole was denied, on the simple fact that she didn't act sad, because she showed no sadness during that whole thing. But yeah, so that's the story on that. Tell me what you guys think. Was she pushed, or did she just want to kill him? What do you guys think? Let me know on Twitter @itiswhatitis. 208, because that's where I'm from. On Instagram, it is what it is, pod 19, all together, no spaces. On Facebook, it is what it is, a true crime podcast. On YouTube, it is what it is, a true crime podcast. Have a great week. Mwah. Bye.